some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Nashville's favorite way to wake up. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery, with Mark Howard, Blaine Bishop, and Kevin Ingram.
.45 The Zone, the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Go by any Tennessee Lottery retailer and have a little fun with those June instant games today. Time once again for our good buddy, David Beauclair from the Nashville Post. He is also brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery. Dave, what's happening this morning?
Not a lot. I continue to be fascinated by how Darius Garland becomes a better and better player the longer he hasn't played. I mean, it was...
He's rising the board.
When he started at Vanderbilt, it was like, he's probably a one and done, but maybe. We'll have to see how well he plays. Then when he got hurt, it was all, he's probably around 15 to 20, probably the lower end of the lottery, but, you know, he'll be good. And I mean, now he, you know, you're talking Cleveland go as five, I think, is a good possibility. But, you know, there was the talk yesterday that he squeezed in a late workout with the Knicks at number three pick. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just yesterday. He apparently did a private workout for the Knicks now. So, I mean, the guy just gets better and better the more he doesn't play.
And you're talking about a live game now, Dave.
Yeah. There's reports
now, he was the number one player coming out of high school as a point guard. I think now the NBA guys are now digging a little deeper. Right. They're digging a little deeper. Then they're working them out and they go, this guy is this guy that we thought he could be, and we didn't get to see it because of the injury. But it's funny how that has happened. It's funny. Everybody's reporting, but I think most guys get hurt,
and it's like, you know, it's like, oh God, what's this going to do to their draft?
I'm going
to
give you a comparison though. Who else got hurt? Who now plays in the NBA? They didn't play but about 10 games, maybe less than that. Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie Irving.
See? So the same thing happened. You saw the same thing happen with Kyrie Irving. He only played like 10 games.
Well, like he worked out for the Knicks, reportedly, as Boki just said. Yeah. And there are Knicks brass people reportedly now saying, take him over R.J. Barrett.
And R.J. Barrett was the number one player coming out of high school, by the way.
Yeah, he was supposed to be better than Zion Williamson.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Maple Mamba.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's gonna be really interesting what they decide to do. I'm putting my money on Darius though,
and good for him. I mean, he looked like he was having fun on the Tonight Show the other night.
Yeah, I saw him out there.
Yeah, like he. I mean, the kids,
LeBron and them screw. So now he's big time.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, the kid seems to be. You know, he was on ESPN. He's talked to a bunch of different media people this week. He really does seem to be having a good time with it and sort of trying to make the most of the position he's in at this point. So it'll be a big night for him, no question.
And as I've said before, and we're watching one right now, if they're going to show these highlights of Darius Garland, they need to crank up the audio because I did all these games.
He is that reverse. I mean, right there.
Special player.
Hang time. Yeah, look at the point guard pick and roll right there. That's NBA all day with the left.
I didn't do that one. I mean, I did this one.
And you know, it's funny, you guys mentioned going into the last segment that if he hadn't gotten hurt, you know, Bryce Drew would still have his job. And it was funny because like at this time last year and leading into the season, I thought it was remarkable how much Bryce Drew was willing to talk about Darius Garland and how important Darius Garland was going to be to that team. Well, even most coaches with great freshmen, they do everything they can to tamp down expectations early. And Bryce Drew did none of that. And I think it was clear, like he understood right from the moment Garland signed with him, like I think the term he used that day was a program changer. Like this is a this is a guy who is completely different than most people you've ever seen. And they were willing to put everything on him from the get go. And obviously that injury could not have been a worse thing for them from that perspective.
Yeah. Now he's just sitting at the beach collecting checks.
Yeah.
Tough life.
Doing appearances on Channel 5.
Yeah.
His top assistant, Roger Powell, finally, like Gonzaga announced that he joined their staff. Like he'd been working there since April, I think. They finally announced, but that's a nice soft landing spot for a guy that had a really rough season and a guy who wants to be a head coach someday. That's a place you're going to get some recognition now.
Yeah, they're worse places to be than with Mark Few at Gonzaga.
Yeah.
What do you think about some of the other prospects in this deal? And we'll hear from Paul Biancardi shortly about the Tennessee guys. But which one of those do you think has the best chance or maybe the best upside or whatever you want to call it? When you talk about Williams and Schofield and Bone, which is our Twitter poll question this morning.
Yeah, I'm with Blaine on this one. I like Bone's game the best from an NBA perspective. Mm-hmm. I he needs to be mentally tougher. There were some nights and to his credit, he would talk about it like he just didn't play with the confidence that he needed or you think he should have or that he showed some other times. Grant Williams is a fascinating study to me, and you guys were talking about it. You know, 2-time SEC Player of the Year. Is he going to have any kind of an NBA career? I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he's a guy who plays like 30 games in the NBA and 5 years in the G League and then decides to do something else. He'd be a great coach. I mean, he's got that natural leadership. I mean, I think that was as much as some of the baskets he made, his ability to sort of keep that team moving in the right direction, I think it was overlooked a lot of ways. And Schofield, I just don't know. I feel like Schofield has sort of maxed out the player that he's going to be. The whole floor versus ceiling thing. I think he's about at his ceiling, and I don't know if he's going to be able to make a long career for himself in the NBA. He can obviously go to Europe and play for 15 years if he wants and do it that way. But
see him as a second round pick?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do.
I'm hoping all the guys from Tennessee get drafted in the first round. Guaranteed money around here.
Schofield's one of those guys. I mean, I don't think he would fall out, but like if teams start like we've had the discussion down here about Simi Chatu, and somebody's probably going to look at him and go, 6'10", athletic as hell. That's worth a second round pick somewhere. Schofield's a guy who could start losing if there's a bunch of guys like Chatu, and I don't know if there are, but if there are guys like that and teams start taking flyers, Schofield's a guy who could slide down then, I think.
Because speaking of Chatu, do you think he should have stayed a year or
absolutely.
I've heard a lot of talk about him. Even at some of these draft, prospecting
you hear
camps.
Nothing about him.
Nothing.
Like as much as Garland has been able to raise his stock through workouts and interviews and this and that. Apparently, Chatu has done nothing. You see him nowhere in a sleepers list or any. I mean, I nobody's talking about the guy to the.
Is that surprising to you or not?
It is a little surprising to me. His take, the story he started or the narrative they tried to develop with him when he announced he was leaving was, well, he had the knee injury. He was never quite right physically during that year. And he's going to be better now. And I don't know that he's been able to convince people of that. And it goes back to, what does Simi do really well? In 4-plus games, you saw what Darius Gar, you saw how well he can shoot. You saw how well he can sort of command a game and do those sorts of things. What did Chatu prove that he can do really well other than run the floor?
Right.
but even then, he wasn't effective on the break getting to the rim to finish. Like, yeah, he can get to the other end of the floor just fine, but what are you going to do when he gets there?
There were times that I almost thought he would rather be playing like a point forward than playing down low. I mean, he's got a big body and, he can – He can pass pretty well, but man, he really needed to work on his skills, I thought, was sort of my evaluation of watching him play.
Especially scoring around the rim. I mean, you're 6'10". You're going to need to be down around the basket a bunch, you've got to be able to.
And he wasn't a prolific three-point shooter. We were talking about the flex four position earlier.
Terrible free throw shooter.
Man, it all leads you to say, I think he should have stayed one more year.
Yeah. I think he should have.
I think his brass didn't think so.
Yeah. I mean, certainly if he
will get a flyer though.
Even if he's not drafted, I mean, he'll get a summer league invite. He'll find his way to the G League. You sort of get the sense he was kidding himself though, thinking that he's gonna be a guy who, I mean, he's cost himself a lot of money. We'll put it that way. If he had come back and had a good year, he could go next year and certainly be a first round pick, I would think.
Yeah, I'm always like doing comparisons, and to me, Shih Tzu, it should be more like Ibaka.
Okay,
your game should get to that level. I mean, where you can shoot threes, you can handle around the basket, you can handle the ball just good enough. So. I don't know if he can get there and understands that those are some of the things he needs to work on to get there. I think he thinks he's better than he is.
That's the thing. Like, confidence is a good thing. It's a good thing to bet on yourself. But to a point, you also have to listen to wisdom around you that tells you what you could be. What he lacks is the same thing I think Jordan Bone lacks, and that's polish. There's a lot of polish that's not on his game that he could get by staying in college and learning from a fundamental standpoint and starting to kind of, I don't know, caulk over a couple of the holes that you can obviously see in what he's got.
7:12 the time. We have David Beauclair with us, brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery. Want to jump in on any of the draft conversation we're having here? 615-737-1045. And try out our poll question on Twitter. Which of the Tennessee Vols who are expected to go in the draft will have the longest career, Williams, Schofield, or Bone? I've got a little take on some of this that might be against what we've talked about already this morning. We'll get to that when we come back. More Wake Up Zone. The Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery at 717. Tennessee Lottery is proud to have raised more than $5 billion for education. They also sponsor our visits with David Beauclair from the Nashville Post every week. Check out the website, nashvillepost.com, and read all of David's outstanding work. Our Twitter poll question this morning of the Vols in the NBA draft, who will have the longest career, Williams, Schofield, or Bone? Okay.
I said Bone. Bokey said
I think Bone.
I say Bone.
I kind of said I thought
the longest career.
I thought Bone might have the best or longest career too, but
it was a guess.
I kind of think Admiral Schofield might be better than people expect. I'm not saying he's going to be an NBA All-Star, but you look at his numbers. He shot 38% from three for his career, including 41% last year, and almost 40% as a junior.
He did. He improved drastically, and that's going to be his role. Let's imagine him on a great team with some superstars, and you just stand over in the corner, be a great defender,
three and D guy.
Hit the open three. Yeah, you can make a lot of money in this league that way. Who can he guard? Because is he about, 6'5", really?
6'6".
Yeah, is that what they're saying? He's really 6'6"?
He's listed as 6'6".
Oh, then he's not 6'6".
Yeah, Corey Brewer had a really nice career being a great defender in the league.
Right, that's what I'm getting at. So who do you imagine him being more like P.J. Tucker? Or I mean, I'm trying to figure out Crowder.
Who are we talking about here?
Admiral Schofield. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So that's what the NBA guys start doing. They start comparing them to guys already in the league, and who could he fill a role? I just don't know. That's kind of where I see him. I don't know if he could get any better than that. Crowder's a great defender, but he's also, he's an open three.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Grant Williams, I continue to say, is DeJuan Blair to me, who didn't have a long career in the league. Also had no ACLs.
Right. I was going to say, Grant Williams got two ACLs.
Yeah, so that helps him.
I mean, to Schofield's credit, or say this about him too, he will. I mean, he will accept whatever role is given. You know, like if a coach sits him down and says, "Look, you're never going to score more than 8 points in a game for us," he'll say, "Okay, yeah," but we expect your man to never score more than 8 points a night, too. You know, and he'll say, I'll do what I can. You know, yeah. I mean, I think for some guys, that's a tough transition to make going to the NBA.
I think it is. You know, but these guys are great guys.
I think he's better equipped to make that adjustment than a lot of other guys would be.
Yeah, he's definitely. He's class personified when it comes to that. He's going to do whatever they ask him to do, and he's going to be ready when his number's called.
Mm-hmm. And what were your thoughts, Bokey, on like the draft? I was saying expand. You know, there were some articles out there about maybe they should have the draft at all. How do you feel about the draft?
I heard that driving in. You said that, and I think you can expand the draft again now because of the evolution of the G League, and it's becoming a bona fide minor league. And I think and the fact that you've got so many 18, 19, 20-year-olds coming out now too, I think you know there's an opportunity for teams to take a guy in the third or fourth round, say, and you know, we're going to stock you in our G League team for 2 years and bring you along. I do think you can do that. Is the NBA interested in becoming a developmental or the developmental process now? It seems like that's the way the thing is headed, and I think you can do it now. The 2-round draft made sense for a while. I think expanding it is probably not the worst thing right now.
Let's get to a call or two here. Coach T, good morning. You're on the zone. What's up?
Fellas, good morning. How you doing this morning?
Good.
Good morning, Coach.
Hey, well, out of those three, a couple of things here. I think the point you just made is excellent. They're not going to expand that for the one reason is that I hope a lot of these ball players are looking at this draft tonight for the simple fact you've got a lot of Europeans. And if that mock draft is anything correct, you're going to look at about anywhere from 10 to 15 of those cats taking jobs in this first round. So out of all these big programs, not a lot of jobs left for a lot of our kids here. The other thing is, with the expansion of the NBA going over to Africa, hopefully starting next year, it'll reduce a lot of those guys coming overseas, taking some jobs. And then, of course, obviously, this year starting 2020, you now have the one-and-done phase that's going to kick back in from the high school kids getting drafted going into the NBA. As far as those three concerned, I think Apple Schofield is going to have the best opportunity for one reason. He's kind of like that Draymond Green coming out of Michigan State. And you said it. He will be able to go anywhere, fit into an offense, fit into a defense. He'll probably go late first round, guaranteed money, or early second round. And that means he'll go to a team that's going to probably be on the 8, 9, 10, you know, getting into the playoffs. And I think he can fit that role. He's extended his jump shot. He's extended his ball handling. I think he's going to get bigger. And I think he's going to watch one of those kids out of UT, Schofield, be the star.
All right.
Appreciate it, Coach T.
Bold.
I
think he may have success earlier before most, but I think as we look over time, I think Bone will, I think he'll continue to get better and better and work on his jump shot and get a better feel for the game at the point guard level. So, yeah, but it's hard to argue, though. Admiral, man, he got a jump shot. You just stated there, ain't you? 41%. Wow, his senior year.
He was filthy from that short corner, too.
Oh, it
the
was
threes in the corner. That was just like
he shoot with his eyes closed.
Yeah.
That's a tough shot.
If it's based on body fat, he'll definitely have a successful NBA career.
Yeah. That's another reason why I'd say I went long term with Bone, man. How many NBA players you see built like that? I think that guy could play defense as a tight end.
And it's more of a guards league than it's ever been. And that's where I like Bone, too.
Let's hear a little bit from Paul Biancardi. We had him on our show yesterday from ESPN.com. As long as we're talking about the Tennessee guys, he really had some big plans for Grant Williams as far as maybe being the best NBA prospect of that Vols trio. Here's Paul.
I think it's Grant Williams for me. I've known him since his high school days here right in Charlotte, North Carolina. And the one common denominator with Grant Williams is wherever he's played, his teams have won. And he's a big reason why. He may not be the reason why, but he's a big reason why. He's got maybe the highest IQ of any draft pick, enormous on both sides. He reads the game like no other, and Rick Barnes has attested to that in the past. He's a facilitator who can give it up at a moment's notice and make others better. Now, his scoring comes mostly inside in the college game, though he shot it at 30% from three. He's got to change that three-point percentage. It has to move up if he's going to be somebody in the NBA who can score a bucket. But I think he plugs and plays wherever he goes because of the IQ, the toughness, changed his body. And I think he's going to have a career in the NBA.
Paul Biancardi from ESPN.com. Kind of put a bow on our conversation about the Tennessee dudes.
I mean, he clearly loves Grant Williams, and he's watched him for a long,
Carolina area.
Right? He's watched him for a long, long time. The one thing that you have to be really careful of, because we all have watched these kids that look like the greatest thing we've ever seen in high school. And then some of them go to college, and they go to small colleges. You never hear from them again. Like, man, I thought that guy was going to end up as one of the greatest players of all time. Right. Eventually, you hit the level you're supposed to be at. Some people hit it in college. Some people hit it in high school and never play in college. Some people make it to the NBA, and then they're role players, and they're not superstars. I think that the consensus in this room, and pretty much any room, I would say, in this state, is that we're rooting for all these guys. Mm-hmm. All of them. It's going to be fun to watch their careers. Hopefully it's going to go positively. I see flaws that Grant Williams can't fix because he can't make himself faster at this point in the game, and he can't grow 2 inches magically either.
We got to get real quickly too to Dylan Windler. I mean,
we cannot forget about him.
I'm telling you, go to the Lakers. Take him in the second round if you're the Lakers, because what do they need right now around Anthony Davis and LeBron James? Shooters and scorers. And what can Dylan Windler do? He can guard on the perimeter, and he can shoot the three.
And another guy who always does the right thing with the ball, reads the game well. I mean, if he can learn to read Anthony Davis and LeBron James, you can do that's an interesting point.
Yeah, Indiana guy. I'm all about those Indiana guys. Yeah, you know, those Indiana guys, man, they can play some ball, man. We're talking about
especially guys from Indianapolis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But like talking about Grant Williams' IQ. I don't care how smart you are, if you're not fast enough, if you're not big enough, if you're not athletic enough.
I respect Grant Williams way too much. But it's going to be a tough haul for him. So he's going to have to really sit back and assess after he gets drafted, because he'll still get drafted because he deserves that, right? And how well he does in the NBA, though, will still be a big question. They stand in his workouts. He's shown that he can shoot the three ball much better than his, you know, percentage 30%
or whatever it was.
So we'll see if he's been working on that, because that's going to have to be his role. Now, who will he guard?
That's the thing.
And not like they play a lot of defense in the pros, but who will he guard? Is his foot quickness there enough to guard guys that he's going to have to guard, like a three, which is usually probably, besides the point guard, one of the most athletic guys out there on the court?
The answer is no. that's the problem. I mean, the Raptors just won the championship largely because of defense. Kawhi's known even more for defense than offense. Van Vliet's great on the perimeter. Lowry's a great defender. Siakam's actually an improved defender. They won on defense. What is Grant Williams going to offer you defensively? Hearing about his IQ says, man, he's going to be a great coach. I'm telling you.
I agree. No,
he's going to be an awesome coach.
Yeah, he's getting the insights right there. They're going, hey, man, this guy knows a little bit more than I do.
728, got David Beauclair from the Nashville Post in the house. NashvillePost.com is where you can read his work. We'll talk about Vandy's run in Omaha when we come back. More Wake Up Zone powered by the Tennessee Lottery coming up first. Blaine, tell us about Gary Ashton.
Yes, you found the perfect home, but you can't buy it until you sell the one you have. Well, with the Gary Ashton team, that's a thing of the past. Blaine Bishop here for my friend Gary Ashton with RE/MAX Advantage, the number one RE/MAX team in the world. You know, Gary is the don't sell without the intel guy. Now he's helping you get your dream address without the stress. With the Gary Ashton team, now you have an option to get your dream home as soon as you find it with a strong cash offer. It's a program they're making available to help you avoid the fuss of having to deal with showing your home in open houses. So instead of sell, then buy, we're talking buy, then sell. No more losing the home of your dreams, and no more taking the first and only offer. You can now make an immediate offer on your dream home before you sell. Get your dream address without the stress, and that's with Gary Ashton team at RE/MAX Advantage. And just give them a call, 615-301-1650, or you can visit them online at GaryAshton.com today.
The Wake Up Zone, we're powered by the Tennessee Lottery at 734. Our visit with David Beauclair, also brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery. Want to join us here, 615-737-1045, and on Twitter at WUZ1045. But Dave, for the Vandy baseball team, the news has been good from Omaha so far. They had to wait an extra day with the rain, but a pretty nice win over a really good Mississippi State team yesterday. And Kamar Rocker gave them what they needed, got them deep into the game, pitched six really strong innings. And, man, they went to Tyler Brown as early as they've ever gone to him. Got that big last out of the seventh, and then pitched the eighth and ninth, and Stephen Scott with a couple home runs. And now they're a win away from getting to the championship series.
Yeah, actually, I think, wasn't that Tyler Brown's fourth seven out save of the year. I mean, he can do that, and I think it speaks to just how good he is that, you know, they don't delay going to him.
They're not messing around with anybody else. You just go to him.
Yeah, I mean, just get straight to him. And I mean, that was the time to do it yesterday. You knew once Mississippi State started hitting that team believed. And that was, you had to do something to sort of shut the door, and he came in and did that. But, you know, Kumar Rocker, that was an interesting day to me yesterday from Vanderbilt's perspective, because you wondered, physically I thought he'd be fine. He had plenty of, you know, for after having thrown 131 pitches in the no-hitter, like he had plenty of rest, like that wasn't going to be the issue, but you know, how was he going to handle all the attention, all the, you know, and just, I think his internal expectations, you know, how do you manage not going out there and thinking, I've got to do that again? Mm-hmm. And he handled everything just fine from what I could tell watching on the TV. And then another two home run game, this one from Steven Scott. I mean, this team has won seven games now in the NCAA tournament, and four of them they've had a multi-homer game from somebody. Austin Martin's done it twice, Julian Infante once, and now Steven Scott. And, I mean, seven of their 10 runs in Omaha have come off home runs right now. Contrast that to 2014 when John Norwood's decisive home run in the Virginia series was the only one they hit in Omaha.
That wasn't just the only one they hit in Omaha. That was the only one they hit in like a month.
They didn't hit any in the SEC tournament, the regional, or the super regional that year. Right? Xander Wheel, I believe it was, had hit one in the last regular season series.
Like in a midweek game or something, Xander Wheel hit one, and that was the last one until the one that Norwood hit that won the World Series.
So this, and you know, you guys were having the discussion again, is this the best Vanderbilt team? This team, that 2014 team, you always felt like they were going to find a way to win. Mm-hmm. This team, you just don't think they're going to lose. I think that's a subtle but big difference. Mm-hmm. I think you know, like this team now, like what they've done through this postseason run, it has been, and you can even start with the Ole Miss game in the conference tournament championship. I mean, they're just relentless in a way that I don't remember a Vanderbilt
team. Somebody's always
stepping
up. Yeah. Do you ever think that now, at some point, that the pressure will be on them a little bit, that, you know, they're now expected to win it all?
You know, I think that's been the case
the whole time.
Well, certainly since the Super Regionals, because mm-hmm. a bunch of teams got knocked out in the regional round, and Duke was a team that wasn't supposed to be here, and I think if it was gonna show, it would have shown in that series, because that was the first time you're really going, this team is set up to win, and they look like they should dominate this series, and then they get dominated in the first game, and all the pressure was on them at that point, and they've just handled everything just fine. The thing that's looming out there is a potential championship series with Michigan, and of course Eric Backich, you know, coaching Michigan. That's fascinating to me, because Eric has more. What I know about Eric Backich is he tends to have more fun with competition than Tim Corbin does. Like Tim Corbin is just, I want to rip your face off all the time when it comes to competing, you know, how those two will handle that situation, if it comes to that, will be really compelling to me, because I almost feel like Eric will have a better handle on that than Tim, but that's obviously a long way off at this point.
Experience by Corbin
I mean, the atmosphere really carries over to your players. I think Corbin I don't think it'll affect the way his team plays, but I think internally Corbin will wrestle with he'll have to fight through a couple moments of, I don't want to beat my friend's brains in, but I'm going to be playing my friend, and anybody I play against, I want to beat their brains in. So, you know, that's kind of, I think that's kind of the way Corbin operates.
Oh, if I'm back then, I'm a crack a joke with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right off the bat.
And Eric is a funny, you know, he's a funny guy and can, and I you know, yeah, I think he can play a little psychological games in the day or two between the, if it comes to that, it'll be. But yeah, these Vanderbilt players, they just seem unflappable. Wow. And you see it when an opposing pitcher kind of handles them the first time through the lineup, they always start hitting or start taking the right pitches. Yeah. They handle every situation right now. I mean, you hate to start looking at this going, I mean, it just looks like they're going to win. You don't want to put that whammy on them, but you watch them and it's tough to think that they're going to lose.
My thought was going into the College World Series, when I examined the two sides of the bracket, I thought if they could survive this part of it and just get to the championship series, that they'd have a good chance to win next week.
I thought
regardless of who they played out of that other side, because you got Mississippi State and Louisville, which are both excellent teams, and not that there aren't good teams on the other side. In fact, I thought Arkansas would be the one that would make it from the other side of the bracket. They were gone after two games.
I thought the same thing. I thought Arkansas is going to have a laugher on that side of the bracket, and this other side they're going to beat each other up for a while, and we'll see what that does with things. But that certainly didn't work out that way.
And to me, Stephen Scott has been sort of an unheralded player for this program for a couple of years. You know, I go through highlights of games, I call and stuff, and more often than not, I'll stumble across some home run that he hit, and it's always in a big spot, and he's a guy who gets better as you get toward the end of the season, as the postseason gets here. Last year, he was just blistering hot when they got into postseason, and this year's kind of been the same thing. He's been really good.
But yeah, three home runs in the last three games, and he's one of those guys, too. Like, you talk about the last couple of years, and I know, Kevin, you talked about it a little bit last hour with him learning to play catcher at one point. I mean, he's played a bunch of different positions.
Mm-hmm. Like first base.
You know, he's a guy who's moved around and sort of plugged holes this team has answers to everything, it seems like. And they've been a lot of fun to watch, and it'll be a good weekend here.
7:42, David Beauclair is our guest from the Nashville Post. If you'd like to join us, 615-737-1045 or on Twitter at WUZ1045. .748 the time, the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Proud to have raised more than $5 billion for education. They sponsor our segment every week with David Beauclair from the Nashville Post, nashvillepost.com. Where you can read David's work. What about Barry Trotz winning Coach of the Year again last night?
Yeah.
Who had that going into this season, his first year with the New York Islanders?
We let him go one too many years before. He's won a Stanley Cup Coach of the Year 2 years
ago. Coach of the Year twice,
he does not admit to be for the Predators.
we wondered some years when he was with the Preds if he'd ever win Coach of the Year. Now that he's gone, he's won it twice.
He said thanks for releasing him from being Coach of the Year.
He was head and shoulders above the rest.
Yes, he was head.
It's good to be Barry Trotz these days, though.
Boy, isn't it?
Things have worked out for him.
When did the move start for David Poile now that the season's over?
This weekend, probably. You think about it, the whole Trader Dave persona kind of started with the James Neal deal, which was executed during during the NFL or the NHL draft that year. What was that, 2014? And then the PK Subban Shea Weber deal, those discussions started at the NHL draft that year, a couple years later. You get all the GMs staying in one hotel, all of them together on that draft floor, discussions happen. So whatever deals David Poile's going to make, they're going to be discussed in earnest this weekend.
But if you're the GM, though, what deal would you be trying to make? Or at least who would you get rid of? Not necessarily who
I mean, the obvious answer is you've got to find a way to get Kyle Turris off this roster. Everything else is just degrees of what you're looking, but Kyle Turris is the guy you're saying, this didn't work. It hasn't worked for almost two full seasons. Certainly two full playoff years. It hasn't worked. It's time to find something else there. I think that has to be his job number one. It's just find a way to do something different there.
But how far will he go? Will he maybe pay half of his salary, or will he get a good trade partner here that give him equal value or as close to it as possible, since he's kind of played down the last couple of years?
I don't know. I mean, it seems clear that the rest of the league sees Kyle, or at least parts of the hockey community see Kyle Turris differently than we see him here in Nashville. I mean, the fact that he keeps going to Canada for the world, or play for Canada in the world championships. He was captain this year. I mean, you don't just give a guy a C like that. I mean, that says people think highly of you. So I tend to believe that somebody will want to take him and that contract, and just you know, maybe you don't get exactly what you want, but I think the Predators can get him off the books. I think that should be their focus.
Mm. What about PK Subban? What do you think the chances are with that big salary that maybe they get something for him, or don't do anything at all?
I go back and forth on that. I think it makes, you know, I guess it comes down to how much money do you want to spend in free agency? You know, I can you get Matt Duchene if you just clear Kyle Turris off the books, or do you have to do something more? I think it's pretty clear this team really wants Matt Duchene. So what do you have to do to get him? Does that mean you have to move one of your defensemen? If you do, whether it's Subban, Ekholm, Ellis, I think you can feel pretty good about doing that based on what you saw with Dante Fabro at the end of the year. You know, you feel like you're still going to have four pretty good defensemen, or four better than average defensemen when all is said and done. So, you know, Subban's a guy I think a lot of teams would be interested in, even with his salary. I think if you're inclined to do that, but deep we get into the offseason, I'm not sure the Predators want to do that. I don't know why I'd feel that, but it just because I've said, you know, Subban's talking like a guy who's ready to be moved.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to way, you know, like the things he has said this offseason are similar to the things he said in 2016. I think he's ready to be moved. It doesn't feel like that's happening to me right now all of a sudden, and it did for a while. I don't know.
When you read about, or maybe you read about, Kevin Hayes and the deal that he's getting, that tells me Duchene's about to get serious money.
Yeah.
Like 9-10 mil a season kind of money. Can the Predators make that happen? I don't know if Turris is enough to get that done.
I don't think he is, and that's where moving a PK sort of becomes paramount. And the other side of that is, are you sure you can make the best offer? Like, even if you can get to $9 million, is that going to be the best? I mean the Predators have become a much more attractive destination for free agents. There's no question about that the last 3 or 4 years, but yeah, you still, you know, wanting him and creating the cap space for him are one thing. Actually getting him here is another thing, because Matt Duchene is going to have multiple suitors. There's no question.
What about the Carlson deal, and how much that affects Roman Josi's extension, maybe, and what his price tag will be? Carlson got $11 million, I think, per year.
Yeah, for a little more, you know. It just kind of topped the deal Drew Doughty had signed. Is Josi in position to make that kind of money? Maybe. I guess probably not for 8 years.
it sounds crazy, right? Maybe not. I hadn't
thought of that, because what, you know, the way I've looked at the Carlson deal is sort of what happened, what has happened, because defensemen are on the move. Mm-hmm. You know, Olimata's been traded. Jacob Trouba's been traded this week. You know, you see these top quality defensemen, and to me, it sort of feels like prelude to the Predators moving one of their guys, whether it's Subban, whether it's Ellis, Ekholm. You know, I think one of those three guys is certainly, I think all of those guys are in play, and somebody might be moved before all is said and done. But, you know, I hadn't thought of it from Roman Josi money standpoint, but you're right. That just drove up the price tag probably a little bit.
So when we see $9 million a year, what?
Now, Yossi's not a Norris Trophy winner. Yossi's not, but, But yeah, I mean, $8-9 million for Roman Josi.
You don't sound sure in your tone.
Well, at his, I mean, he's played a lot of hockey. I mean, I mean, you're paying for the years that are that he's going to be in decline at that point. I think that's the chance. Like, yeah, Roman Josi. I like Roman Josi. I think he's a great player. I think he's a great part of this team. But when you're talking, you know, when you're talking about a contract that starts with the 2021 season and goes 6, 7, 8 years, I mean, you're paying for the years he's going to be in decline at that point. And I don't know that you want to pay $8-9 million for a guy who's going to be going down.
David Beauclair, always great to see you, man.
All right. Everybody have a good weekend.
Do the same.
Appreciate it.